You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe the niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record and edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36. As a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moya Ritzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen. And now, Rischa Daraisa, coming your way. Get ready. If it's the 9th of Adar, this must be Rischa Daraisa. We needed Rabbi Yosef Gavriel Bechavar and I to get in a episode before the Yoyim Haboy Aleinu, the Yoyim that Yom Kippur is only Me'ein Zeh.
We understand that you have come back as the conquering hero from the Midwest. So tell us a bit about what you spoke about in Chicago.
Okay, I was not really much of a conquering hero. My point, I guess, was to allow people to understand things themselves and perhaps inspire them to accept things. It was definitely a Purim-themed event. I tried almost completely to talk about a day that I would hope would be used properly by everyone involved and not, you know, hijacked, like in the terms of Jonathan Glazer, for people's insidious ends. I spoke about who is the Megillah, who is the MMVP, who is the Megillah's most valuable personage. At an Onik Shabbos, I took on the persona of two different types. First, a more feminist reading of Megillas Esther, cherry-picking Midrashim when necessary, pushing a certain pshat orientation, how Mordechai was wrong on so many counts and represents sort of a patriarchy that is always making decisions for others and sometimes bamboozling his constituents and indicating how great Esther was. And then,
so he showed you true colors.
Well, I'm sure many people on your blog would have appreciated that spiel. And then I put my black hat back on, and then I argued that Mordechai was really the most valuable person in the Megillah, talking about his koyach to direct, just like Chazal throughout the ages, many times our link and our connection to the Rabbeinu Shalom. They don't necessarily take center stage, but without them, the process really doesn't happen, and how many of the Midrashim that are sometimes cited by the modern Orthodox feminist world are many times taken wildly out of context, and a knowledge in Kabbalistic ideas is always essential, and especially many statements that seem to be.
What is that? I'm curious. What is some midrash that the modern Orthodox take out of context?
Well, even the idea that that Esther needs to, she's amona itoy, and she needs to therefore continue her sexual relationship with Mordechai. She's with Achashverosh, and she comes back to Mordechai to live with him as well. This would sound very, especially as the idea that Mordechai would keep her coming back to him, this sounds very, very strange to the modern Orthodox ear. So I'm saying they use that to say how Mordechai, they like it because it makes Mordechai a person who is dominating, who is pushing an agenda which isn't well thought out.
Where have you seen any modern Orthodox person make that argument? Sounds very far-fetched.
You don't think in the modern Orthodox world Esther is the most important character in the Megillah, and that really Mordechai has to take a back seat? That it's the proof of feminine actualization. It's the great hero of the Jewish people. It's someone who discovers themselves, discovers themselves really by unshackling themselves from Mordechai. I can't point to any specific thinker who said it, but in my mind, it definitely aligns with what I have heard. And therefore, I sort of posited playing that role.
Rabbi Avraham, you set up a straw man or a straw woman in this case and use that to pillory modern Orthodoxy. I wonder who you convinced that be pro-Esther on that argument.
Well, it wasn't only that. It was also the fact that Esther's ideas are the ones that carry the day. And why is it that Mordechai isn't asking her, instead of just going into the king, why isn't Mordechai promoting openly the type of tshuva process that Esther says?
Esther says, like, Knosis Kol Yehudim, and Mordechai doesn't.
Right. But she's the one who understands that. Mordechai, you know, is the showboater who himself is screaming Zaka Moro Gedela and wearing a sock, but he isn't necessarily seen, at least in the Psukim, as someone who is being kindness all the Yehudim to do tshuva. Yes, every place where the decree is heard about and perceived, there's an Evel Godel Yehudim, but in terms of actively changing, it would seem that Esther is the one who is the suggesting of that role, suggesting that's what Klal Yisrael needs to do. So in that way, yes, I would say there's probably a lot of people out there who it resonates with. And part of my purpose was to say that neither of these approaches, the approach that, you know, it's only the story of Esther's growth, and Esther herself unshackles herself from the control of Mordechai's dominating personality, or the idea that really it's just the secret of the Chachamim. I mentioned, of course, the famous Yismach Moshe based on the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvahs, that Mordechai knew everything that was going to happen. He knew that this was not a situation that really would end in the destruction of the Jewish people. He knew it was Lifnim, and therefore he specifically pushed the confrontation with Haman in order to not only make a Kiddush Hashem, but also because he knew that Klal Yisrael would not be destroyed, but rather it would end with a great Hesiris of Tshuva. This, of course, is the way, you know, the Yeshiva Welt, or, you know, many Rabbanim throughout the Deiris have looked at this story and seen Mordechai as typical of Chachmei Yisrael, even Bizman Hazeh, which means that we have to medavsei troirin, we have to trust them and know that they really know what's better for us, even though logically it would seem what they've done really endangers us. So I thought this was a good way to use this debate that I had among myself. I was actually two different people. Neither of them is really myself, but that was what was one thing that I did.
The second persona would not have approved then of Rizka D'Oraisa.
Of course not. The second persona would say that Rizka D'Oraisa is full of speculation and judging people incorrectly and not recognizing that people with Das Torah and people who are the Chachmei Yisrael really are operating on a much higher level, and they can't be subjected to that type of criticism. Yes, you are correct. But I think I was able to play both sides. I have to tell you, there was a vote in the shul afterwards, and the shul was a modern Orthodox shul, so of course the Esther side won convincingly. I also spoke about the need on Shabbos Day, and we've said this many times, but I want to reiterate it to all our listeners. We lost Yom Kippur. Let's try to let Purim do what Yom Kippur couldn't do.
Where did we lose Yom Kippur? Where did it go? What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that October 7th, Shmini Atzeres showed that the tshuva and the kapara was not niskabel, that whatever sort of tahara we achieved, it definitely was not of the type that we could have achieved.
Okay, so we not lost Yom Kippur, we lost on Yom Kippur.
Yes, in other words, Yom Kippur was squandered in a way, or at least we didn't do enough avodah before Yom Kippur to allow Yom Kippur to do its thing. But now we have Purim as a way to perhaps do that. And what would be the method of doing that? One of the things I said was, is not to make facile, simple analogies between the Arabs and Amalek, not just to go out and say, well, Sinwar is the next Haman, and Purim is all about winning and killing, and that's what we have to do. That, I think, would be the wrong thing. I think we need to allow Purim to have its Kedusha. We have to allow the balance, and this is what I said is the reason why we read the five Parshios, Truma Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Vayakol Pikudei, every single Purim, no matter whether it's a Shana Muberes or not. These are the Parshios that embrace Purim, because these are the Parshios that teach us the Yesodis of Kedusha in the world, the Yesodis of how it works, how the Olamos work, the numbers and indicators throughout HaKamas HaMishkan. If you study them properly, it gives you a gilui into the patterns of the Ishtalshus Abriya, and it tells you how one can discipline themselves to be Masik Kedusha. Purim is all about human agency, you think. It's all about human agency and our enemies, and God is working behind the scenes, and whatever, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to hope the will of God is with us, and there'll be a Hatzolah. I think all those statements are hollow, and that was part of my message, was yes, that might be true, but we have to anchor our Avodas HaPurim in Hasagas Kedusha, being Masig the Shechina. And again, like we've talked about before, a religious renaissance that needs to occur. And that can only occur with the discipline that these Parshios demand.
You're afraid that Purim's going to be politicized and contextualized as a part of the war against Hamas, and that's going to cause it to lose some of its intrinsic Kedusha? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Well, it won't lose its Kedusha, but we won't tap into it. Yes. Purim is there. It's there for us to dive in, yes, with simcha, but also recognizing that it's with this darga of simcha, this darga of beyond das, that we can bond with the Rabbeinu Shalom, and he can be matzil us, and we can find him in ways that are even greater than Yom Kippur. Finding God isn't just about promoting the war. Finding God isn't just about recognizing that people want to destroy us. Remember, you know, there is a sense, of course, of how, you know, Amalek needs to be destroyed. But Amalek's destruction, even though it is physical, and I've mentioned this to you often in some of our first programs, but it's only a means to an end.
Right, but you're not saying when a person sings Asher Yishlitu Ayudim Heima B'Soneihem that they shouldn't have in mind Hamas.
I think to overemphasize Hamas would be a mistake. I think, yes, you know, definitely we are against a ceasefire, at least I am, and I'm sure many of our listeners are as well, because that means Hamas stays. My point is that Purim songs and Purim Avoda have to be beyond the fact, those enemies that we have, they're going to go down. I think that's the Purim, that's the childish Purim. I think that's the Purim of that the Ramah speaks about, of people jousting and injuring each other. That's the Purim of Wildkeit, which is there, but again, it would waste the opportunity.
I think there's a very radical message you're imparting here, because you're saying, I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but it's saying, you know, basically what the Amon Am sees as Purim is to be rejected, and Purim is esoteric debt.
This year for sure. Right. I think that's the Nisoyan, and that was part of what I was saying to my audience in Skokie. The other two presentations, I gave a shiur on Melchemes HaMolech, deconstructing the directive of destruction, a lot of alliteration there. And I have to say that Lakewood's Shifty publications are a great, great resource, because all I had to do was basically tap them in and go through the Meir Mekoymes, and they did a great job. So I recommend to all our listeners the Shifty publications.
Everybody should know that this is not spelled Shifty, but Shivti.
Yes, Shifty. Shifty Beveis Hashem. They're not Shifty.
Like they say, shift.
They're not shifty. You know? They're not shifty. I also spoke on Shalashidus about the holy Zionism of Rav Mordechai Gifter Zatzal. And again, I know he has a warm spot in your heart as well, as he was really, in a way, one of the guiding forces of the Chabura Tahira in Telz. Really the great American Godel, like a real product of the United States. And I heard Rav Gifter speak about what we lost in 1967. I mentioned that at Shalashidus. I guess I'll say over one of the, you know, I talked about the idea of being ready to get God and get the Ashras HaShchina wherever you are, even if it's pulling over on the side of the road, as we used to do, going into a phone booth, pretending you're making a call, but actually using it as a way to daven mincha as the sun is setting, you know, on some highway. The idea of Shechina and the idea of being masig the Shechina and recognizing the opportunity Eretz Yisrael has and world events have of Hizgalus HaShechina. And one of the things I mentioned was the first great moment of Hizgalus HaShechina for Klal Yisrael, not necessarily for the Nevi'im of Klal Yisrael, the Ovois, was by Makas Bechoyres. But that Hizgalus of Shechina, as the Netziv points out, did two things. On one hand, it galvanized and jump-started and helped create Klal Yisrael. But it also zeroed in on the koyach of the Bechoyer of the Mitzrim that also had potential for positivity, potential for connection and even greatness. But because of the environment that it was raised in, the environment that it was partaking of, the environment of Avodah Zorah and Znus and other things that were glorified and turned into something holy in their mind, therefore the Hizgalus of the Shechina destroys that. And that really when we ask for Hizgalus HaShechina, we have to realize that it's going to wipe away, it's going to destroy many of the Musogim, many of which, you know, the modern Welt or the Western world or the woke culture believes is the greatness of humanity. The Hizgalus HaShechina, like by in Mitzrayim, will wreak havoc upon that, and it isn't going to be so simple.
I don't know about woke culture, not woke culture, but it's interesting. Psadik says that the Shechina is never goes. Right? Even the Shechina, because wherever Am Yisrael is, that's the mokum of the Shechina. So when we talk about Shechina Bagalus, it's a borrowed term. It's not literal, because the Shechina is supposed to be Am Yisrael is. So I'm not sure about woke, not woke, but obviously Am Yisrael, when it comes to its status of Mamleches Kohanim Begoy Kodesh in a real way, that's when the Hizgalus Shechina will take place.
Right, but as in the first, and I say it in a Tzedokian manner, just like the very first great Hizgalus HaShechina did lead to the destruction of the Mitzrim, and especially the death and the Hefsik of Chiyus from the Bechor HaMitzri, there's going to be a Hefsik of Chiyus in this next Hizgalus HaShechina as well, and we have to be ready for that. Again, I didn't overemphasize that to my audience, but...
Oh, that's why Trump called for a bloodbath. Now I understand.
Yes. But I mentioned in this regard the idea of always being ready, and Rav Gifter, the fact that, you know, I heard from a good friend of mine who was in Telz, who would go to New York periodically for Shiduchim, a trip, you know, that I made even a longer one, because this was a trip I made by car. So I'm very familiar with this for this route. And they would have to come back and be back in Telz by a certain time. So the fellows had car trouble, and they had pulled over at a gas station in Hazen, Pennsylvania. So they called Rosh Hashiva to tell them they were going to be late and to get permission, because that's what you have to do. You know, so Rav Gifter said, Wie sind dir? So they said, where are you? So they answered, Wir sind in Hazen. So Rav Gifter answered, we're in Hazen. So Rav Gifter said, in Hazen? Avada bist in Hazen. Wus, you said naked off in Gas? Of course you're in your pants. What do you think? I didn't think you were naked sitting on the street. But ich frage dir, wie sind dir? I'm asking, where are you? So that wonderful story, which did happen, to me was a great metaphor of, you know, where are you? Yeah. Of course we've got our pants on. Yes, we have. We are clothed and we are ready, but are we ready to be Makabel Rebbeinu Show?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.